Jim Sexton, for the longest time I've wanted to say this.
What? Are we live now?
We are perched deep within the plush Bassmaster Studios, high atop Bassmaster Towers, overlooking the beautiful magic city of Birmingham, Alabama. And this is Inside Bassmaster Live. For the first time, we have tied a bunch of cameras together. We put headphones on. We look professional. We got a lot of wires going every which way. And it is going to be our goal today to produce the first Inside Bassmaster Live episode. And I never thought we were going to do this. And look, before we get going, you can't see him, but our executive producer, Chris Mitchell, has worked tirelessly for a long time to get everything going, and we've managed to make it happen. So before we dive into a lot of the cool topics we're going to talk about, I want to introduce everybody. To my left is going to be the 2019 Toyota Bassmaster Angler of the Year, Scott Canterbury. Across from him, his lovely wife, Dixie. Next to her is the executive editor of all things Bassmaster, Brian Brasher. And then next to him is the man that keeps his thumb constantly hovering over master control of all things Bassmaster Digital, hovering over me as well. Jim Sexton, thanks for being here. And in the corner is Taylor. Thanks for being here, Taylor. If we have a fire, her job is to make sure the door gets open so that we can all get out. So anyway, welcome. Thank you for being here. We're excited to do this. We invite you to post questions. We would love to hear what you think. If you have questions about Scott's year, if you have questions for us about why Brian's wearing an Alabama hat, anything, we'll pick and choose appropriate questions, of course. Please don't waste our time with useless questions. But all questions are good pertaining to our season. So let's get into that.
That was brutal.
Well, you know, it's an interesting day. We all know it's an interesting day, and we're just not going to touch that topic. So let's talk about Bassmaster. Let's talk about Angler of the Year, and we're going to start in with Scott Canterbury. Thank you for being here.
Hey, I appreciate it. Really appreciate the opportunity and looking forward to spending some time here.
Well, let's start with, we'd like to get a little bit of your history, your background. Did you grow up in Alabama? Who is the person that exposed you to this game? Talk about that.
I did. I mean, I grew up in Moody. I live in St. Clair County now, or Odenville, which is the neighboring city there. But I grew up in the same house. I graduated high school from the same house that I was born in. So it's been a great, you know, life in Alabama. And I grew up, my dad was a big fisherman. He's an iron worker. My uncle's all iron work. But, you know, my dad, they got me into fishing at a very young age, probably 3 years old, I imagine. I was spending the Saturdays on the Coosa River. Mainly on Lay Lake, we fished the tail races of all the major reservoirs. I either went to the very 5 miles below Logan Martin or the 5 miles below Neely Henry or the 5 miles below Weiss Lake. I grew up fishing those tail race areas and tributaries, but, you know, with my dad, and then my dad became superintendent of Birmingham Steel Erectors and wasn't able to fish as often on Saturdays, and I spent Saturdays with my uncle on the water. Same thing, doing the exact same thing, you know. That's just the way I grew up fishing. Just pretty much every Saturday of my life was on the water.
You know, we've talked about Alabama being the perfect grooming state for a bass fisherman. Talk a little bit about why we have so many top-level competing pros that are from the state.
You know, I mean, it changed for me, and that's when I got to where I started fishing tournaments. I was a teenager and started going to the lakes, and we have such a diversity of lakes in the state. We've got the Highland reservoirs that you see in the Midwest, but we've got lakes like Lake Martin and Smith Lake that are similar to those. And then we have the rivers that I grew up fishing with a lot of current. And then you have the main lakes at like Logan Martin, and you got the Tennessee River, which is its own beast of itself. You know, you got Gunners One, Pickwick, and Wheeler, and you know, we can fish anything from flipping docks on the Coosa River to fishing the current up the rivers, to fishing grass lakes, to fishing Highland Reservoir with rock lakes. So, I mean, it's just a diverse fishery, and the amount of great fishermen in the state of Alabama, if you could compete locally at a very high level, you can compete at anything, for sure.
Well, it seems that way. We've got a good number of them that have come from here, but it seems like that plays well to making a career out of it, just being able to if you're going to be able to make it at this level, you have to beat a lot of good fishermen.
You do, and I mean, there's a lot of guys that, you know, are very, very capable of being able to do it that just hadn't had the right opportunities or something. There's guys all over the country, I'm sure, but I know a lot of them in Alabama could definitely catch them as good as anybody.
So was this a dream of yours early on, or did it kind of develop as you aged?
No, it was a dream of mine to do this at a kid. I mean, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to watch Bassmasters coming on with Bob Cobb and everything. I mean, that was a dream, but it was a dream. I mean, I didn't ever think that it could happen or anything. And, you know, I went to school at Moody, and then I went to Alabama for a year and a half, 2 years. I didn't graduate because I just thought I wanted to work and make money, and I did all right until I got my boat down there and I started fishing on the Warrior down there instead of going to class, which wasn't good, but it's all worked out.
Yeah, well, that's how that goes. So, Dixie, when you entered the picture, did you know that you were getting into this hot mess? Did you sign up for this?
Scott and I have known each other since we were 5. We were great friends in high school, but we never dated because I wasn't dating. Because you're younger than me, and I was like, oh, no.
A whole other podcast. Right?
That's right.
So after I graduated from Alabama, I moved back home to Moody, and we were going to the same church, and we started dating, and we're engaged 6 months later. So, yes, I knew.
Good for you. I mean, the wives don't get enough credit for this.
That's right.
They really don't, so good for you. So,
Scott, so your early working career, you worked in construction?
Construction's all really what I done, yeah.
Yeah, residential, like rehab and various things like that?
Yeah, I grew, I mean, as I was a kid during the summers, I would stay the weeks with an uncle of mine, Jeff Armstrong. He had Armstrong Construction building houses, and I learned how to do that from the time I was 10 or 12 years. I might, you know, when I was younger, I'd probably just clean up and build fires and keep all the wood picked up and stuff, but I got to work years and years at doing that, and I really enjoyed it when I got out of college there. I went to work for Birmingham Steel Erectors with my dad doing millwright work and a little bit of iron working. And that was really, I mean, you can make a lot of money doing that, and it's really good. It's a great career, but you have to work a lot of Saturdays, and I like to fish tournaments on Saturdays. So I started a construction company, or went in with a buddy of mine, did a construction company. We framed houses, we remodeled, we built decks, we did a little bit of everything. And that was great for 7 years, probably. And
I need to put something in right there.
Let's have it.
Our biggest fight was when he said he was going to buy a boat. We had just gotten married.
That's okay.
No. I'm still bitter. He was going
to
have a boat.
And got to. I had to have one.
That's a lot of couples' biggest fight. I promise you.
But did the construction for years and was fishing AAA stuff. Fished opens, fished Costa events, or it might have been Strand or whatever. And while I was gone on the road, I mean, I'd have a house being framed or a big deck or something being done. You know, I only had like 3 or 4 people working for me. They'd be calling me, and I just couldn't concentrate on fishing. So I ended up going to work for my fishing partner with Plum One, Barry Isabel, and it all sort of snowballed from there. I mean, he fished with me. We fished the Costas, and then I qualified, and we didn't know if I was going to do it, but he made it where I could do it.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about that. Jim's got a bunch of statistics he's crunched, and I want to get into that. But before we touch on that topic specifically, talk a little bit about that transition where you qualified to fish the tour and I guess some ups and downs through that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I fished like the Southeast divisions a few times, and I got used to those lakes. And I would always be right there on the bubble, but I would be fishing. I mean, in my mind, I was fishing stuff that I'd knew, you know, the year before and things, and that's one thing that's been with me my whole career. But and then I fished a central division, and we went to lakes that I'd never been to, and I almost won the points. I can't remember, I finished second or something, but that's when I qualified, and Barry had traveled with me. It was all lakes that I'd never even been to, just going out and fishing and having fun. So, you know, once I did that, you know, and then you had to come up with entry fee money and stuff like that, and you know, I didn't know if I was going to do it. I ended up working for about another 4 years as I fished full-time. He allowed me to do that, stayed with him, run a crew while I was gone. He traveled with me and fished as a co-angler. He won an FLW event as a co-angler that year. So it was a pretty special time in my career for sure. That's the only way I got started.
And Barry apparently told you need to go ahead and do this full-time.
100%.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And to sit here today and see where that led you, he's got to be a very important part of your life.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, we left from St. Clair with a trophy coming home, and I went by Plum One before I ever went to the house.
We saw that Facebook post.
Yeah, and, he's been like really helped me a lot over the years, for sure. I mean, my career, I mean, I don't know where I would be, but I definitely probably wouldn't be where I am without him.
Oh, that's great. Well, let's jump in and look at your fishing career, and we'll start with your FLW career and look at a few of those numbers. 11 years with FLW, 175 tournaments. Your rookie year, you were rookie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And we should also note that your first day of competing as a pro, you zeroed.
I did. I learned a lot that day that I still use, though.
But you ended up finishing fairly well at that tournament, or was it the
next
one?
No, that tournament, you know, we went to Toho that year, and I'd never been there, and went down and practiced. And I was catching fish. I mean, I thought I was catching 10 or 11 pounds a day, you know, and didn't really know if it was going to be good, but we had an off day, and we had a huge cold front come in Florida, and there was, like, frost on the boat the morning of the off day, frost on the boat the morning of the tournament. And I was catching fish, throwing a Senko around real shallow like you do in Florida in the springtime, and I guess I just outsmarted myself. I put a big flipping stick in my hand with a big weight and thought I was just going to catch 30 pounds flipping big mats because of a cold front, and I never got a keeper bite that day. So okay. The next day I caught 10 pounds, and it actually took like 16 pounds in that tournament for 2 days to get a $10,000 check.
Wow.
And that's where I learned my lesson. You better stick to what you learned during practice. What's going on at that time anyhow?
So 42 top tens there, and you had two wins. 2011 at Eufaula and 2016 at Beaver Lake.
That Eufaula was a Costa event, but yeah, that was a win. That was a big win for me that year, and then Beaver Lake was a tour event, and I was able to fish to my strength. 20 fish, I weighed in 19 of them on a jig in that tournament, and that was pretty special.
I show that you competed in 10 cups.
Yep.
Finished second twice.
By 1 ounce one time.
Ooh.
Jumped a 5-pounder off on the last day, or I would have won by about 3 pounds.
Ooh. Ooh. And your best finish in the points race there was 8th.
It was.
You were steady throughout your career there.
Yeah. No, it was good. Yeah. There was I think last year I probably finished 8th. The year before,
yes.
I think I was in 2nd going in with 2 tournaments left. I ended up bombing both of them and falling to like 20s. But I had some really good runs over there. I've had a good career, but super happy to be where I'm at now for sure.
Well, let's jump in then to your Bassmaster career. You have a total of 26 tournaments. That includes 10 elite tournaments from the past year, and then 16 opens. And something we always do when we look at angler stats is how many tournaments and how many times in the money. All right, so 26 tournaments, 18 times in the money. So
that's a good
you're in the money percentage.
You can live with that.
Yeah, in the money percentage of Bassmaster tournaments is 69%. So we don't see it that high very often.
I think of all the interviews we've done, seldom there's probably a handful that have above 55%.
Yeah, that's right. 2 second places, Winyabe this year, and then at the Douglas Open in 2016. 1 third place tournament, that was also this year, St. Lawrence River. And you've had 6 top tens. So really a phenomenal run. Your earnings, total earnings at FLW were about $1.3 million. Bassmaster, so far, $256,946.92. Not quite sure how that 92 cents comes in there, but hey, take it, right?
We'll take it, yeah. We'll take it,
yeah,
for sure.
So total of more than $1.5 million. In fishing, not bad. First Bassmaster tournament was 2004, Smith Lake. And then you fished the Southern Opens, all of them, in 2010. 2013, fished all the Northern Opens, which was interesting to see. What led you to that decision to jump into the Northerns?
I couldn't tell you. I don't even remember fishing them, to tell you the truth. I just like fishing whatever it fit into the schedule, you know. That's all that is. I mean,
yeah.
I'll fish anything that'll fit into my schedule and I'm able to make it to.
Yeah. 2015, 2016, 2017, you fished the Southerns, and then one in 2018, one Southern Open in 2018. So 2019, we're just going to go through your finishes real quick and Brian will probably have a few questions related to these or comments that you've got about how you did, Adam. first elite tournament of the year was St. John's River. You finished ninth. And as the story goes, you had a tough first day, but certainly rallied.
You know, I mean, it was a tough day, but, you know, I really think we had an off day at that event, and I think it was a lot tougher on everybody during our practice. Those fish really moved up. I only had like three or four little places that I'm pretty positive was like a shell bed, catching them on a rattle trap up the river, and I think only like three boats went up the river. So I caught some up there on those shell beds, but it wasn't what it was three or four days before that when it was still a little cool. And then I locked through into, what lake did we?
Rodman?
Rodman. Yeah, I locked through into Rodman. I had some big bites over there flipping mats, and I caught a couple, but I didn't have those bites during the tournament like I was having during practice. And, you know, I had 12 pounds. I think I was in 54th place or something. And that there's a turning point to it. It's a strange year, but it's been unbelievable. The decisions you make is where it gets you where you're at. Because everybody out here, I mean, we got so many young anglers. Every one of them's got the potential and the capability of catching any bass in the lake. But when they were doing the national anthem, I think I was in the first flight that next day tied up to the dock, and I was looking at my deck of my boat, and I had two rods out with two lipless crankbaits on them, or rattling baits on them. And when they got through with the national anthem, I turned to my marshal, and I told him, man, I said, I'm not going to do that and catch 12 pounds. I put them up and got a flipping stick out, and I said, if we flip all day and I catch two that weighs 12 pounds, it'd be the same thing. And I caught 26 or 27 pounds that day. So, you know, it didn't happen like I didn't run right to them or whatever, but when I found them about 10 o'clock, it happened in an hour. I caught, so I laid off of them that day and went back the next day and was able to catch almost 31. And that's the way my season started. Every event's been that way, though. It's pretty, the ones that I did good in, and the ones I didn't, I tried to force things to happen. And I've known that. I've been doing this long enough to know that you can't force it. You can't make them be where they're not.
That recovery, one thing it did was give you an opportunity to be a part of a really special championship Sunday.
I mean, oh, yeah.
The weigh-in crowd that day was as electric as I've ever seen. And you've talked
about it. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before. And, you know, I mean, I would not have jumped ship and left where I was at to come to Bass or anything without my sponsors being behind me. And they were all behind me to come over here. They knew what it was worth, and they knew that Bass was a great place to be. So I did that first, but I still, you didn't know if you, you know, I didn't know everybody. I knew a bunch of people. I mean, I fished opens and everything, but that first event, man, that weigh-in, that crowd, it's unbelievable. The whole field is full of people, and we're setting up on a stage, and I'm right beside Rick Klun, who's already weighed in 35 pounds, who I grew up watching as a legend in the sport for sure. And you look across the road, and there's people on top of the buildings holding up banners for Bass. It's just amazing. Unbelievable how loud and the excitement and the energy that the crowd brings.
So that was a good start.
Yeah, it was a great
start. Good way to start.
It was a good way to start.
We're going back next year.
We had another event. I left straight from there, got to Lanier at 1:30 in the morning, and Matt, my roommate, wakes me up at 6 telling me to get on the water. It's going to be daylight. I mean, that was pretty neat. Right.
Well, a lot of times I feel like the guys who finish in the top 10 in a back-to-back tournament don't do very well at the next tournament because they have fished 4 days, they got to turn around and start practicing. But that wasn't the case for you. At Lanier, you finished 11th.
That was another good event. That I don't think I had anything super strange happen in that one but we found a pattern that was able to hold up, and I thought I could catch, you know, I mean, I caught a lot of fish on a Ned rig and a shaky head on clay and stuff, and I thought I had a pattern that would hold up. I kept 12 or 13 pounds. And, you know, once I had that 13 pounds, I think the first day, I started exploring other things, you know. I mean, it was so, like, I'd never been to a place that was, it stayed foggy for 2 days of practice. You couldn't run around. You could hear boats running. You couldn't see them. They'd run 100 yards from me, and you couldn't see them during practice. But, you know, I'd had some history on that lake a little bit, and we had fished there with FLW, and I got out way out deep on some points and some humps, throwing a Kitec, little paddle tail swim baits and stuff, and caught a couple of really big fish that day. It boosted my bag way up, and I was able to expand on that throughout the tournament too, which helped me.
Very good. Then we go to Hartwell. You finished 22nd there. And then Winya Bay, where you finished second and really were close to winning that
deal. Did you catch a big fish at Winya Bay?
I didn't. I caught a six 6'2", I think, and a 5'8", in about 15 minutes on day four, but it wasn't big fish of the tournament, right. I don't think.
Yeah,
somebody caught a 7-pounder, I don't know.
That was the moment, though, when, I mean, you're watching your season, and you see great consistent results, and you go where it's really tough at Winya Bay. All of a sudden, you got those two big fish.
Ooh. Well, that was on day four, too. You know, that was another, just like the St. John's River, I'd never been there. I went over there and pre-fished. I went for 2 days, and I rode all the rivers that was flooded one day, and then I rode the Cooper River one day. That's all. I mean, I didn't fish, and I marked some points out on the river that had coontail on them, and practiced them during practice and didn't get a bite. But I found some fish on the bed, so I decided to make that 100-mile run to the Cooper River because I thought I could catch 12 pounds even if things didn't go well. I caught 12 pounds the first day, or 11, 15, I think, the first day, and I was in good shape. My plan was to go over there one day and then stay over close the next day and catch 8 or 9 pounds. But when you catch 12 and you're in good shape, the competitor in you wants you to go back, you know. So yes. I go back the second day, and I really struggled. I think I only weighed in 7.5 pounds or something. And I had about 30 minutes left to fish, and that day I only had 4. And I ran like 7 miles past where I'd been fishing and opposite way of weighing in, and made one pitch on a bedding fish that I seen during practice and caught it. It was a 13-incher, but it was a keeper, and it got me in the cut. So then I'm so far back that you got to go back because that's the only place I thought I could make up ground. But I just decided to run stuff that nobody was fishing. I went further up the river than anybody was at because I was around a lot of boats those other days, and I ran out of bed fish, obviously. But, you know, I went further up the river and put a swim jig in my hand and just was able to cover a bunch of water, caught a really big bag. The tide was up, and I was able to catch them swimming a jig. Didn't do that during practice, never had a bite doing it. And then the next day I go back and put that swim jig in my hand, and the tide's completely gone out, and it just didn't feel right. I didn't throw a swim jig 10 minutes, and I picked up a buzz bait and went to catching them then, too. So it's all up. I mean, like I say, those decisions are what gets you where you're at.
I got a question for Dixie here. So we're about halfway through the season, right? And we've always talked about the danger of Bass Track. Because you kind of want to stay up on it as curators. We try to watch so we can make decisions to move from angler to angler to keep up the content well. But you aren't able to be at a lot of these tournaments. And so how much time did you waste at work watching Bass Track this year?
I'm pleading the fifth on that. There's probably people watching from work, so I'm not going
to
say.
She's supposed to be at work.
Well, but what I'm saying is.
But I do keep up with it. And
is it an addiction?
Yes.
Yeah.
She won't. She don't watch live, and that's eat your time up. She does Bass Track.
Yeah, I do turn on live on the weekends, but even that stresses me out. So I try to stay off of Bass Track as much as possible, but it's hard, and it's burned me. When Winya Bay was one of them.
Yeah.
So you have to take it with a grain of salt.
That's right. That's right. Now, it's important for all of us. It's a great page on our website.
Yes, yes.
But if you're following your significant other on there, it'll burn you. It's burned us a time or two.
Well, and Dixie, I told you after, I think it was after the Gunnersville tournament, that I was watching that Winya Bay coverage, too. Mm-hmm. And when he caught those two big fish, that's the first time it really occurred to me, this guy may win this thing. AOI. Yes. I mean, he's going to have a real shot at it. And I'm just wondering, was that the time when it occurred you? I mean, had you thought about it before then?
You know, I mean, my goal starting out the year was to make the Classic. I mean, and I had a good year. I mean, we'd have to go back and look, but I don't think I ever got outside that top 10. I started out in 8th. I think I stayed up there right in the hunt all year. About it some, but, you know, I really, really didn't start thinking about it until after that New York trip. I thought about it before, but I knew I had to survive that, but, after that, it was all that was on my mind.
Yeah, I'm sure Jim will talk about that. The word survive just doesn't cover what you did in New York.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the next one, we had a little break and then went to Lake Fork. And you talked about with us earlier that you were looking forward to it because you had some experience there.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
You finished 49th at that one.
I did, and that was one of those where I tried to force things to happen that weren't happening. Fish were spawning. There was a shad spawn going on that it was sort of a – that shad spawn wasn't easy to find. It was sort of hit or miss, and I never did really get on it. But I had a lot of bedding fish, and the weather, we had some bad weather the last day of practice. It muddied up one side of the lake where I had a lot of my fish marked, and it sort of threw me a curveball. I was still able to catch a few, but man, I've been over there for a Skeeter Owners Tournament in June, and I caught the first day I ever spent on Lake Fork in my life was in a Skeeter Owners Tournament, and I had five bass that weighed about 37 pounds that day. It was, and when you get that kind of history, you try to make things happen, and it wasn't happening. I mean, I was trying to catch them out on a jig and trees and stuff, and on docks, and it just, they was not that far along. I caught a 6.5-7 pounder during practice, and I said, man, if I could just get five bites. And I just wasted so much time and never got a bite doing it. So, I mean, it was my fault when I look back at it 100%, but, I mean, we take gambles sometimes, but we, as an angler, we have to learn, and I've done it a lot over the years, but we can't force things to happen that's not happening. You can't make them be somewhere that they're not.
All right, after that, we come home for you, a tournament where you could probably sleep at home if you wanted to, at Gunnersville. Did you sleep at home?
I may have once or twice during practice, but no, I stayed up there. I stayed up there on the lake, and, you know, that tournament there was, I mean, it was a decent a good tournament, really. I mean, I think I finished 22nd.
Yeah.
But, you know, I roomed with Matt Airy in that tournament, and we had all the exact same holes. I mean, I gave him holes that he caught a lot of his fish on. He gave me some holes that he caught fish on. And I caught a fish or two off of one of his places. But, boy, that was a timing deal. And I ended up being, like, boat number five. I could have started anywhere on the lake. And I started on a community hole that I didn't even make a cast on. I didn't want nobody to see me on it during practice. And I caught a few there. I mean, I caught a four-pounder, but I lost about a four-pounder at the boat. And it was just a timing deal. I mean, I'd pull up and Matt would be on an area, or he'd pull up and I was there, and he'd, like his first cast, he might catch a five-pounder. I mean, which was great. I was pulling for him to win that tournament. He had a really good shot at it at the end. I was hoping we both could get in the top 10, but it didn't work out so well for me, but he had a great tournament. And it was a good event, you know. I mean, I'll take a 22nd, you know, so that's a good finish.
So you're still in the hunt at that point, and we moved north, and we ran some content on Bassmaster.com, an interview with you before that New York swing, and you said, I'm just hoping to survive it.
Yeah, and, I was.
And so we get up there, and you bust out with a third-place finish at the St. Lawrence River.
That place is just amazing. I mean, I don't know what to say about it. That place, it's just a healthy fishery. It's got giants in it. I got in an area or two. Matt and I worked together. I think he did really good in that tournament, too. Again, we worked all year, but that tournament there, you know, and, you know, I had a couple little areas. He had a couple of separate stuff and some of the same places we fished together. But, you know, that was a great tournament. I mean, I caught all those fish on a spinning rod. I ended up using lighter line than a lot of people. I caught some of them on 6-pound line. I think that was one of the keys around some pressured fish from – caught every one of them on a spinning rod with a drop shot from 6 to 10 pound line. It was pretty 84 amazing.
84.5 pounds on of smallmouth line.
Several of them were on 6. I went from 6 to 10 is the biggest line I would use, but it was an awesome event. I mean, that place is special to me now. We're going back next year, so I might have to make a trip up there before it just to have some fun.
That was the first day of practice, the first day you had seen that fishery?
No, I went up just like I did to the St. John's, okay. And when I went up there and rode, you know, we had two pools that we could fish. I fished one pool one day and one the next, and fish were still on bed. I mean, it was totally different. I never, the section of the river that I ended up catching them here in the tournament, I had never seen before in my life. Because you can't cover 70 miles of a pool in one day of practice. Right. But the 15-mile section that I ended up fishing there in the tournament, I'd never seen till practice.
Pretty impressive.
Well, at this point, so St. Lawrence comes to a close, and you have to start feeling a little bit of the AOI pressure, a little bit.
I had the lead then. I was getting those $1,000 checks for leading, and that was pretty awesome. But, I had some pressure, but, man, I was just thinking after St. Lawrence, if I can get through Cayuga, and then we're going to Fort Gibson at that time. And I knew, I'd never seen Fort Gibson, but I just knew that it had been high, and I figured it was all largemouth from all the research I'd done, and I'd be able to catch them just flipping bushes, and I thought that would be right up my alley, mm-hmm. You know. So we had some curveballs thrown our way.
That's right.
Sure.
We all did.
But I really, it's been a weird year, but I told them all year, even when everybody would, I had more pressure on me when people would talk about it at the beginning of the season, But when it started coming to tuition, I mean, like, I was at pretty good peace with it. I didn't have that pressure. I just went out and fished and tried to do my job every day.
So we had back-to-back at that point with Cayuga. And interesting, so in Cayuga, you finished 11th.
Yeah.
So you got a third and 11th out of that back-to-back. The other back-to-backs we had this year, St. John's and Lanier, you got a 9th and an 11th. South Carolina back-to-back, Hartwell a 22nd.
It was a year of back-to-backs.
Hartwell was 22nd, and Winyah was 2nd. And then Ten Killer and AOY were back-to-back, and you got a 19th and a 14th. So do you like the back-to-backs? They were pretty good to
you this
year.
I do. You know, I like fishing. I like staying on the water, and you're trying to make those decisions of figuring them out, and you're not just – I'm not at home just thinking about other things. When I'm fishing, I love to stay. When I'm at home, I go fishing 3 or 4 days a week because that's what I like to do is I like to stay fresh and try to figure fish out, try to learn something every day I'm on the water. So I like the back-to-backs. If I had an opinion, I'd like to have a day of travel in between them, but yeah. I do like the back-to-backs.
Yeah. I bet if we started looking at the stats deeply and how many guys do well in back-to-backs, I think we wouldn't see as many guys who did as well as Scott did in the back-to-backs this year.
I would agree.
So, great performance at Cayuga, and then we go to Ten Killer, and you have a 19th there. And there was a big turnaround at that tournament for you.
Yeah, that was another one of those that something happens. You know, the first day of practice and the second day of practice, the water's up in the bushes pretty good, and the fishing's actually pretty good for guys that are fishing the bushes. The guys that aren't fishing the bushes, it's still tough, but their fish are coming to them. And I've seen a lot of guys that had really, really good practices bomb that tournament. Really, I mean, just totally bomb it. And there were some of them that thought they had a chance to win. I mean, I know Matt Heron was catching them. Jay Yellis had really good bags during practice. And, I mean, I didn't even talk to Clark, but I'm sure he did. And Clark Winlet zeroed the first day. I don't know. Something happened there, and it was probably the water falling out of the bushes. But I had planned on fishing bushes, and I did. I caught like 9 bass in the first hour on my buzz bait and only had 1 keeper, which I had a lot better by. And I had several. That place has got a lot of fish in it. I had several that first day that were 15 and 3 quarters or 15 and a half. We're talking about a 16-inch bass. I mean, a 15-incher is a keeper on the Tennessee River. So you're talking about a good fish to be a keeper there. You know, I did all right the first day. I stayed in, you know, I don't know if I kept the lead or fell out or what happened the first day, but the second day of that event, you know, you got to catch them every day. You can't let up or you're not going to win. And the second day, I was the last boat that went out because we went out in order. We were going in standings. I was boat 1 the first day, boat 75 the last day. I was doing it at 4 o'clock. And then Davy Hyde had been following me all day, and at 3 o'clock, I had 4 spotted bass, which could be 12 inches. I'm pretty positive weighed less than 4 pounds. And I had an offshore place that I had 2 offshore places. I fished one of them 3 times the first day and never got a bite. And I pull up there the second day and I catch a keeper on a good spot, like a pound and a half on the first cast. And I don't catch one for a minute, but I got my spot lock on my trolling motor. And I mean, I use every tool I can, but I've got the live sight with Lowrance, and I see a lot of balls of bait on it. We've still got a lot of work to do it, but that's a tool. And I see a lot of balls of bait with some individual arches under it, and I throw about 40 foot out past where I had been fishing, and I catch I already had number 5, but I cull all 4 of those spots. I catch a keeper largemouth. In the last, you know, in 30 minutes there, I go from 4 pounds back up to whatever I had. I don't even know, 9 or 10 pounds that day. Caught 10 pounds the next day back. Didn't catch them offshore. I went back to the bank and caught them. But it was that one turning point right there, that one 30-minute flurry sort of saved the season again. And that happened, you know, throughout the season several times.
Yeah, to me that was amazing. I mean, it's like if a pitcher throws a no-hitter in baseball, every time there was one great defensive play you can point to that should have been a hit.
Yeah,
That player saved him. You saved it right there. I mean, just with that little run, and that's what pros
on a Carolina rig of all things, and that's my most dreaded bait that I can have in the. I don't throw a Carolina rig, but I had one rigged up just for those 2 offshore places.
Were you watching Bass Track that day, Dixie?
Yes.
Said you given up.
That's when I. It's a funny story. No, not a funny story, but a good story. That's when I started saying a prayer for Scott, because we were, you know, we were thinking about AOI, and I just prayed for guidance and wisdom for him. And my last thing I prayed for was peace. And Scott's talked about from that, I'm gonna get choked up, but Scott's talked about from that point on how much peace he's had. And so I continue to pray that prayer for the rest of the season. And I gave him a
never slip. Told me about it. Yeah.
I didn't tell him about it because I was like, I'm
she didn't
keep
tell
praying.
Me that she was praying for peace. And it was,
yeah,
and she bought a plane ticket to St. Clair the minute St. Lawrence River was over and didn't tell me till the week of St. Clair. So, I mean, she did a lot of stuff this year, too.
Yep. Well, we know it's a team effort. No question about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
But we're strong believers in prayer, so
yeah.
I prayed with all my might those last few tournaments. And I gave him the slip of paper that I wrote my prayer down on in the last day of the St. Clair tournament, and I hope it helped him. I don't know. He hasn't said.
there's a biblical verse that that I think both of you yep. have used. That's Psalm 16:8.
Yes.
And it says, I keep my eyes always on the Lord. With him in my right hand, I will not be shaken. What does that mean to y'all? What does that bring to you?
So, back to Scott's rookie year in 2008. It was a horrible year for us. It was a great year, but it was a horrible year for us. Smith Lake tournament, during practice, I found out that I had cervical cancer. And I called him, and he came home during that off day. I think that was on a Tuesday.
No, I came home the last day of practice. I didn't practice.
And because they had an off day the Wednesday before the tournament started on Thursday. So he stayed with me Wednesday. You know, we just kind of spent some time together in prayer.
Wasn't going to fish.
He wasn't going to fish, and I made him because, I mean, there wasn't anything he could do at that point. We were still waiting to go see the doctor and see what the prognosis was. So he fished, and he made a huge decision change on that tournament, too. He was completely fishing a different way during practice. And the first day of the tournament, during blast-off, I think he said, I'm not doing this, and went to what he knew and ended up finishing second in that tournament. So that was... It was just a weird thing. The weigh-in was in Birmingham. They asked him about the cancer diagnosis on stage. He asked for prayers, and I, at that moment, felt every single prayer come through my body. And the next tournament was at Lake Hartwell, and I had to have surgery the day after the tournament. He ended up finishing third that tournament. So we were driving home Sunday. I had to get up at 6 a.m. to go into for surgery. Everything's fine. Surgery took care of it. I didn't have to. It hadn't spread anywhere. We caught it very early. So it was that year was.
Roller coaster.
Other things
of emotions.
Happened. Like we had four. I had four deaths in my family. He had two or three with a cancer diagnosis. And then the rookie of the year season, you know, the rookie of the year title. I guess, you know, with everything bad thing that happens, you do have blessings in life still. So we try to just stay focused on the positive and keep all the negative.
And that
out.
Verse has given you both strength.
Yeah, absolutely. That was yes, a verse you stood through
those hard times. That was a verse that we focused on, and we still do. He has it on his jersey now.
That's been great. On there ever since.
That's great.
You talk about peace. I mean, there's an element of peace. I mean, the power of prayer is wonderful, but there is an element of peace too. You know, fishermen do it different ways. Some travel with their families. Some leave their families behind when they
yeah.
go. Knowing it's taken care of at home, knowing that you've got somebody holding down the fort provides
right.
an extra element
yeah.
of peace.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, yeah, it's been that way my whole career. I mean, she's got a full-time job. She works hard and takes care of everything while I'm gone. So that definitely, you know, gives you some peace out there. But you know, and this year, like we talk about that peace, I was at peace if I, you know, going into the last tournament, you know, I knew it. If I caught one bass, the worst I could finish was like six. So, I mean, I knew I was going to have good money, but everybody wants that title. You just, I was good with it either way it came. I just wanted to give it my all.
Sure.
So we come down to the final tournament of the year, and for the first time in the history of the Angler of the Year event, we have a very tight race.
There have been a lot of years where we knew the winner mathematically that's before right. the tournament even that's started right. or even after day one. And I mean, not this year.
I had a spreadsheet going.
Yeah, I had a great year, but, I mean, every time I turned around thought I was surviving, I mean, Zaldane was in second place in an event. I mean, he had an unbelievable year, and then you got the Johnsons, and, just everybody. I mean, Stetson had a great year. I mean, it was just a blessing to be able to come out on top for sure. But, I mean, it was good. It was a tight race all the way to the end, no doubt about it.
Yeah, that's right. And you end up finishing 14th, and with Blaylock coming in second, he had a great tournament.
He did all he could do, yeah. He
jumped a few spots and had a great tournament. So let's talk a little bit about that tournament. To me, I felt like there was a tremendous amount of pressure on four guys who would be hard to relax and just fish.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was huge. I mean, and I know that, I mean, going to St. Clair, I've been there so many times. I've been there many times over the years. You know that that lake's going to produce them. You know, beyond a shadow of doubt, that they're going to catch them. So the thing that gets you is you could finish – I mean, I could have finished 10th and Zaldane win the tournament and I still lose it, you know, Angler of the Year at the end of it. But, go out, practice is 20 to 30 mile an hour winds. You can't hardly get around. You beat your stuff up. And then there's guys that are in the middle of the pack that say, man, I can't do much moving. I'm not going to get out here in this. I stayed out there from daylight to dark the 2 days and then from daylight to 5 o'clock the last day that we could. And put all my time in. I could worked hard, and it was tough. I mean, I found a few areas that had some good fish in them, and the first day of the tournament, I go out and my front graphs go out, both of them. I mean, but I'm in a big area that I knew there's a lot of fish in the area, but not being able to get on your waypoints exactly. My back graphs were still working. I just had some bone fuses and some stuff, but I could walk back and forth. But we're in 3 and 3 footers that day too, so. I didn't go get them fixed. I mean, that was the first thing in the morning. I didn't have a fish at 10 o'clock. Ended up catching almost 18 pounds, and there again, I survived again. So it was, just staying confident and putting your head down. I figured even without graphs, I thought as good as that lake was that I could catch 5 or 6, 7 fish. You know, I mean, you thought you could catch a good bag. And when you catch 6 or 7 fish on St. Clair, you know, the fish are so healthy, you're going to have a decent bag.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you get the AOI trophy, the check is in the bank, everything is great. And in that situation, there is always going to be great positivity on the internet.
Yeah.
Great negativity. There. It's so easy to make a negative comment. You can do it under an anonymous profile. You guys saw some of that.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, but Dixie saw some of it and showed me. But, that's going to come. I went back and looked at – you look at any comments all year long, you can look at Zaldane catching a 5-pound smallmouth up north, and it takes him 4 minutes to land it, and they're acting like they're all – this guy don't know how to fish. He's crazy. Why don't he net it? People don't know everything. I mean, they don't know – they just see what they see, and they just try to get on there and make some comments. But it's all good. I mean, we had some negative comments about thinking I was fishing Seth's hole. And, I mean, I went riding around on St. Clair, a huge lake, looking for him. I mean, I don't have time to do that, I mean, I've got to put my head down. Matt and myself, Matt actually had some waypoints from where he caught some fish last year on a rock ridge. And the first morning of the practice, we stayed on that shoreline because the way the wind was blowing, and I caught a 482, was like the first bass I caught right on the spot that I ended up winning Angler of the Year, caught another 4-pounder, and he came over there and caught a couple. But I mean, that was some of the places that he had from the year past. I'd fished in that area, but he knew exactly where a few rocks were, and there was other boats in that area. And I ran, even on the final day of the event, I run right past where Corey and Seth had gotten Corey over there trying to, help his buddy out, which is understandable. But, I run right by him. I'm 100 yards out from him. People think I just see them, so I'm going to pull up. But I'm 150 yards in front of them when they see me catch all my fish. But I'm not nowhere around them. But, that's all good to me. People don't see what they see.
Funny thing about Lake St. Clair, and it's easy to watch our videos, follow Bass Live, and get an opinion on this, but as big as Lake St. Clair is, it still tends to fish kind of small.
It does do that. And a lot of places do. I mean, you can go look at the Gunnersville tournament. me and Matt and Brandon Lester, we're all, if you looked at Bass Track and seen the dots where we were at, it looks probably like we're sitting on top of each other, and we're all 40 or 50 yards apart. David Fritz is there. I mean, it's you know, we spend 3 days of practice, we're going to find the best place we can to fish, and a lot of people find the same fish. You can go look at Cayuga. I mean, Stetson and myself found the same fish in a flat, and we fished within 15, 20 foot of each other the first, you know, 3 days. So, I mean, it happens everywhere we go, but it wasn't quite the case
well,
this time.
Well, and we've talked. Look, we had an awesome year as curators, as anglers. The attitude behind the weigh-in stage was awesome. A lot of joking, a lot of backslapping, a lot of good stuff that I think that we'd missed out on in years past, so it was good. But there's 75 type A competitive men. Look, there's going to be some headbutting. There's no way around it. This perfect utopia is not going to last forever.
No
but
doubt.
It's easy, and Brian said this, for people to sit behind a keyboard, form an opinion, and say what they say. And you know, we wanted to hear from you on that because it was there were people that kind of went too far.
You know, on day two, there was day two of that event. When I go down to that area, I stop on it, and actually Seth is 600 yards away, and there's a channel going up into the river. He's in there, and I stop. I mean, I don't know. I must have stopped within 25 foot of a school of the winning school, and I didn't even know it. I had about 8 dots in that area, and it's about 100 yards from that rock pond. I just start fishing my way up. As I'm fishing my way up, he runs out to where I'm at. I didn't go to him, but I mean, he wins the tournament anyhow, but when he goes to, I mean, he's killing them. I see him catching them, and I just fishing my way around. I said, "You mind if I fish on the outside?" And he said, "No, I'd rather you not." So I went back up to my rock pile, you know, so I didn't get in his way or try to bother him in any way.
Well, look, that's competitive bass fishing. There's going to be a lot of personalities.
That's every lake, every Saturday in America. I mean, it happens.
And here's to the naysayers. I'll say this. You still got to go out and catch them.
You got to catch them every day, no doubt about it. But
and these guys aren't going to let you have it.
No,
none of them.
No, if I could go around and find whoever's catching them and go right behind them and just take their scraps and win Angler of the Year, I'd be the best fisherman there's ever been in the history.
I might try it myself.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't win doing that. There's no way possible that, I mean, I wish my competitors would follow me around if I'm on a jig bite and try to catch what I lay, put it that way.
Yeah, that's right. Well, so it's been a fantastic year. It's been a lot of fun to watch you make this happen, and we're excited because we actually have an opportunity to really celebrate our Angler of the Year champion, and as part of having y'all here, it's important to make more engagements happen for you, more time in front of the camera, more time in front of a radio mic. We just hope this is the best one that you do all year.
It's
That's
been
the most
good.
Important thing. But the family side of things, and talk a little bit about your day-to-day. How do you guys keep it together when you're on the road so much and you're working? What is your secret?
You know, I mean, I'll go first. I think that, you know, I'm gone a lot, so we can't argue. We talk good when I'm out of on the road. But anyhow, she takes care of everything at the house. But, you know, being a fisherman, you know, we're, you know, part-time fishermen, I guess, and full-time truck drivers as much as we travel all over the country.
Yeah. True.
But, you know, we get this off-season, and in between tournaments we're at home, and that time, quality time that I get to spend with family, the amount of time that's quality time when I am at home makes up the difference, I think. It's my career. It's something I dreamed of, and it's a blessing for me. I don't think it's for everybody. It's not silk sheets and feather pillows every night. I mean, we're out there, rain, shine, or snow. It doesn't matter. Wind blow, like I was talking about the wind blowing, you know, 30 miles an hour and 6-footers, I was out there every day trying to tear my stuff up. But, you know, it's been great for me. It's something that, you know, not everybody gets to make a living doing what their passion is, and it's always been my passion. I just love catching bass.
So let's wrap up with – oh, wait. You need to comment on this.
You know, the first couple of years was hard on Taylor and I. She was only 5 years old when he started.
It was rough on Taylor.
But we've gotten in our routine, and we're ready for him to go about a few weeks.
you make the most of your time when you have it, don't you?
February is the best we can do. You got until then.
You know, he'll be.
They get to eat good when I'm at home.
Trips. That's right.
Yes. That's true. That's why.
Hey, one other stat to put his season into perspective. So out of 10 tournaments, he only didn't make the cut one time. Made the cut 9 out of 10 times.
That's right.
So your average finish for the year, you take all 10 tournaments, 16.20. So
we know what to shoot for next year.
That's an Angler of the Year. It's an Angler of the Year champion.
We're going to have to go back and get some stats on that from previous years because to see where that ranks.
Yeah.
Right now, that's the best one.
That's right. That's great.
So I want you to give some advice. We do this in every show, and I think it's a very important part of the show. There are a lot of the base, the grassroots young anglers that are coming up today. They're very numerous. There's a lot of great organizations out there. If I had school or high school or if
high
I had fishing
or college and, fishing, oh my
yeah,
gosh.
Right. I'd have finished both.
Yeah, I would have too.
So I did finish high school, Jim. Don't look at me like I. But so I want you to give some advice to a young person that has the dream of fishing at this level. You just said it's not for everybody, but talk to them.
It's not. You know, it's got to be your passion. And whatever your passion is, I've always said, just follow it and the money will come later. But, you know, if you want to be a fisherman and you're a young guy, just talk to your school, your high school, and get a, if you don't have it, which you probably do already, get your high school involved in a fishing team or get a fishing team started. It's pretty easy. I love to be a boat captain for these guys. I like to help them out as much as I can. When I'm at home, I carry them. I've been to 2 national championships with Moody, and it's been good for me as long as, and it's been good for them. I have to learn. I can't go out and practice and find fish that I like to catch because it's not a style that they can understand. So, I mean, it's helped me a lot over the years, too. And, you know, I mean, just time on the water. If you're a dad or uncle, take a kid fishing.
Seems to be pretty important. So we've got about 7 minutes left. We're going to answer some questions. And so if you've got some questions for Scott or Dixie, I mean, you've probably got a lot of advice you could offer too. But we're a couple questions here from the Facebook feed. And thanks for tuning in so far. This has been a lot of fun. And it looks like we've got a couple here. And this from early on. This is from Brandon Myers. He says, what jig does Scott use to pitch shallow wood?
Shallow wood, I mean, there's 2 different jigs I'll use. I mean, I use the Canterbury flipping jig. It says Canterbury flipping jig, but it's probably the most versatile jig we have. If there's any vegetation, it's the one I go to. And if there's any current, it's definitely the one I go to. It's all dirty jigs tackle. Yeah. But the other one is a Matt Herring jig. That he just come out with that this year, and it's pretty much top notch for flipping rock or wood like a dock or something. But
if Matt Herring's got his name on a jig, you know it's a good jig.
I mean, it is, and he had a lot of work in that. I mean, there's a lot of jig fishermen in Alabama and a lot of good ones, and, you know, that you get down into other parts of the country, and a jig is not such a big player as it is around here. It seems like in Florida, it's just came on strong in the past few years. Football jigs and things like that have been around a long time, too, but dirty jigs tackle, Canterbury flipping jig, or a Matt Herring jig.
All right, from Jacob DeRouse, if I say your name wrong, I'm sorry. We've kind of gone over this, but touch on it again. At what point did AOI become a reality, and was there a defining moment when you knew you were going to be in it?
You know, I mean, like we talked about earlier, I felt like I was in the race all year, even talking to Bucks Island, where I get my boat, and talking to Matt Herring and guys. And Matt's in 8th place at this time, and I think I'm in 2nd. I said, man, I got a really good chance at this. I ain't saying he didn't, but it's starting to sink in a little bit, you know. And I felt confident. I felt pretty much at peace all year with it. I didn't have any confidence that I had it won or nothing until my fish were on the scales. But I had a really sigh of relief when Zaldane weighed in, so I knew what I had.
The moments like that. So this is from David on Facebook. What was the biggest, hardest challenge for you this year?
You know, I mean, probably, and it's been a challenge of mine for a long time, is just fishing the moment. I mean, don't get caught up what you were doing yesterday. Just like I said, I mean, making those decisions. I did it at Winyah Bay. I picked up a swim jig and caught them on day 3. Put it down after 10 minutes, picked up a buzzbait the next day, which I never had a bite during practice on a buzzbait, and I weighed all 5 of them in on it on day 4, which included those big kickers. Just fishing the moment, just trying to stay ahead of what's happening.
Another question here from Gene. What is your take on going back to the Sabine River in 2020?
Never been there, so, I mean, I'll be excited about it. That's a type of place where if you could get something figured out, you know, it's one of those that it's like the – like Winyah Bay, it's one of those that you can win. If you can just figure out a little bit of something each day, you can win that tournament. It's not like going to St. Clair. I mean, St. Clair, you can get on a school of great big ones, but, I mean, a place like that up north is, I mean, to me, you're drifting around aimlessly. A lot of guys are throwing a crankbait there's a little bit of a luck factor goes into me catching a 4.5 and you catching a 4.25. So, you know, that Sabine will be exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
Outside of the Sabine, we have an outstanding 2020 schedule. I'm very excited for a lot of it.
Unbelievable. I mean, big fish factory after big fish factory. It's going to be exciting all year.
Well, guys, ladies, this has been a lot of fun. We are 3 minutes away from a full hour, and I think we could probably make this a couple-hour conversation, but I think people get tired of hearing me talk.
they get tired of listening to me.
Now we get to go to lunch, and Dixie has to go back to work.
Yeah, I got
to
Somebody's got to go make some money.
That's about right. Look, this has been a lot of fun. Congratulations on a great year. We're glad you're here. You're going to make a wonderful champion. You're going to get put to work.
It's been good already. I mean, I'm excited about all the opportunities that I have coming for me. So, I mean, it's been good already.
Well, we're grateful you guys are here. Thanks for coming in the studio. From Jim Sexton, the behind-the-scenes executive producer. That's a great title for you, Chris Mitchell. Thanks for being here. Brian Brasher, executive editor. Dixie, Scott, Taylor, I'm Thomas Allen. You've been listening to Inside Bassmaster Live, and that's a wrap, and I don't think anything broke, so we win the day.
Well
Thank
done.
You very much.
Amen.